I brought to mind a memory or thought and tried to put an invisible wall around it, my defenses crumbled, as flimsy as waxed paper. Still, he didn't get frustrated. "You can do this," Clancy kept repeating. "I know you can. You're capable of more than you'll admit to yourself." It was his strange badgering for some kind of juicy memory that finally produced my first actual result. "Does it have to be a memory?" I asked. He seemed to consider this. "Maybe you should try something else this time. Something you imagine." It could have been my mind playing tricks, but his face suddenly appeared much closer to mine. "Something you want. Or someone?" The way he said it made me think it was a question. A serious one cloaked by a casual voice. I kept my face impassive. "Okay," I said. "I think I'm ready." Clancy didn't look so sure, but I was. This particular fantasy had been creeping up on my dreams for weeks, invading the slips of time when I wasn't holed up practicing my abilities. It came to me in the middle of our third night at East River, right at the hour that separated day from night. I startled awake in bed, confused as I listened to Chubb snore and Zoo toss and turn. Every inch of my skin had tingled as I tried to process what I had just seen. If any of it had actually happened, if any of it might actually happen. This was a dream I could never share, one I carried deep inside my heart, tucked so far down that I hadn't even realized it was there until it sprang out of me, fully formed. I must have dreamed we were in spring. The cherry blossom trees at the end of my parents' street in Salem were in full bloom. We drove past them in Black Betty, Liam and I sitting up in front together, listening to a Led Zeppelin song that might not have even been real. Outside of my parents' house were white balloons, tied off on either side of the white fence's gate, floating arrows that pointed us up to the open front door. Liam took my hand, wearing exactly what he had worn the day I had met him, and together we walked straight down the house's main hallway, through the pale yellow kitchen, until we found the door to the backyard and everyone outside waiting. Everyone. My parents, Grams, Zoo, Chubbs, Sam. All sitting around a blanket my parents had spread out over the grass, eating whatever it was my dad was grilling. Mom was running around, tying up more balloons, her hands still stained with dark dirt after planting all of the new pale flowers that flooded over what once had been a yard of plain grass. We said hello to everyone. I hugged Sam. I pointed out the birds up in the trees to Zoo and introduced Chubbs to my mother. And then Liam bent down and kissed me, and there were no words to describe that. Clancy's intrusion came like all the others had before, first with a tingle, then with a roar. I had been so lost in thinking about the dream that I hadn't even felt him take my hand to start that trial run. I liked Clancy a lot, more than I ever expected, but he didn't have a place in this dream. There was nothing there I wanted to share with him. I clenched his hand back hard and threw everything I had into sending my other set of hands out from inside me, like a shove. His curtain strategy hadn't worked for me, but this one, using offense as defense, this one was maybe a little too effective. Even before I opened my eyes, I felt Clancy jerk back, sucking in a hiss of what sounded like pain. "Oh my God," I said when I finally shook the haze from my mind. "I'm so sorry." But when Clancy looked up, he was smiling.
"Told you," he said. "Told you that you'd figure it out."
"Can we do it again?" I asked. "I want to make sure it wasn't a fluke." Clancy rubbed at his forehead.
"Can we give it a rest for a little while? I feel like you just tackled my brain."
But Clancy didn't get a rest. Almost as soon as the words had left his mouth, we both heard a very different kind of warning. There was a shrill wail from the other side of the room, one I had never heard before, almost like a car alarm. He winced, tucking his head down to escape the noise, even as he jumped up from the bed. He made his way to his desk, flipping open his laptop lid. His fingers flew as he typed in his password, the blue-white screen of the laptop illuminating his pale face. I came to stand behind him just as he clicked open a new program. "What's happening?" I asked. "Clance?"
He didn't look up. One of the camp's perimeter alarms was triggered.
Don't worry, it might be nothing. We've had animals step a little too close to the wires before.
It took me a minute to realize what I was looking at. 4 different color videos, one in each corner of the screen. 4 different viewpoints of the camp boundaries. Clancy leaned forward, bracing his hands on either side of his laptop. He reached across me to get to the wireless black radio sitting on the other side of his desk. He never once took his eyes off the screen.
Hayes, do you read me?
There was a moment of silence before Hayes' gruff,
"Yeah, what's up?"
came crackling through the speaker. The southeast perimeter alarm was triggered. "I'm watching the feed now, but..." I think what he was going to say was, "I don't see anyone or anything," but his next words had me ducking under his arm to take a look at the screen myself.
"Yeah, I see a man and a woman, both in camo. Unfriendlies, by the look of it."
And there they were. They looked well into middle age, but it was hard to be sure. Both were wearing what could only be described as hunting attire, head-to-toe camouflage. Even their faces appeared to have been painted brown.
"Got it. I'll take care of it."
"Thanks.
Get them to back off, will you?"
Clancy said carefully, then turned the volume of the radio all the way down. Southeast perimeter. Good. Not Liam's area. I let out a grateful sigh. My eyes were still on the screen when Clancy shut the laptop lid.
"Let's get back to work. Sorry for the distraction."
I could feel my surprise betray me. "Don't you need to go out there?" I asked. "What's Hayes going to do to them?" Clancy only waved me off. Again.
"Don't worry about it, Ruby. Everything is under control."
One crack might not be enough to bring a fortress's defenses down, but it was enough to splinter into 2 cracks, and then 3, and then 4. After the initial breakthrough, it became a mission of mine to find different ways to slip into Clancy's mind. I never got to stay for very long before I was unceremoniously tossed out, of course, but every small victory spurred me on to achieve another and then another. I could catch him when his thoughts were focused on something else, trick him into trying to protect one memory while I was really going after another. It surprised Clancy, but I thought it also, in a secret way, excited him. Enough, at least, to have me start practicing on others. It was like running downhill in a way. The momentum carried me through all sorts of experiments, big and small. I made a spectacular mess of dinner one night when I pulled each of the 6 kids working on it aside and planted 6 very different ideas about what they were supposed to be making for the meal, all at the same time. I had one girl so convinced her name was Theodore that she began to cry whenever anyone told her otherwise. It became so easy, in fact, to convince someone to do what I asked, or suggest that they had done something they really hadn't, that Clancy told me it was time to move on to trying to do the same without having to touch the unsuspecting test subject first. I was getting there. Slowly, and maybe not entirely surely, but there was something almost delicious about feeling the same powerful swell of abilities that had once terrorized me, corked, and controlled. Every aspect of them became sharper, easier. But on the Tuesday that followed, we were interrupted again. One of the older yellows, a girl named Kylie, came pounding on Clancy's door. She didn't wait to be let in. I actually fell off the bed with the force of her entrance.
"What's this about you denying our request to leave?"
Tangles of dark curls flew around her face.
"You let Adam leave, you let Sarah's group leave, you even let Greg and his guys go. And you and I both know they have the collective brain power of a fly."
The floorboard squeaked as I took a step back toward the bed. Clancy had left the curtain open when he went to answer the door, so Kylie had a full view of me. She whirled back toward Clancy, who had put 2 pacifying hands on her shoulders.
"Oh my God! Are you in here fooling around? Did you even look at my proposal? I spent days on that."
"I read it 3 times," Clancy said, motioning me forward with his hand. He looked at her with the same calming smile and patience he had shown me since our lessons began. "But I'm happy to discuss why I had to decline now. Ruby, tomorrow?" And just like that, I found myself outside in the morning sunshine. The spring weather was still sporadic, cold and dismal one day, perfectly warm the next. Spending 2 weeks holed up with Clancy had made keeping up with the season's bipolar tendencies even harder. I stripped my sweatshirt off and pulled my hair up in a messy bun. My first thought was to check in on Zoo, but I didn't want to interrupt her lessons. I tried to find Chubbs in the gardens, but the girl in charge told me, in her bossiest voice, that she hadn't seen him in a week, and she was going to rat him out to Clancy for the punishment he deserved. Punishment? I repeated, bristling, but she didn't elaborate. I found him in the next logical place. You know, I called as I stepped onto the dock, bread is actually bad for ducks. Chubbs didn't so much as look up. I sat down next to him, but it only prompted him to stand up and stalk away, leaving his bag and book behind. Hey, I called. What's your problem? No response. Chubbs. Charles. He whirled back around. You want to know what my problem is? Where do I even start? How about that it's been almost a month and we're still here? How about the fact that you and Lee and Suzume are all off making friends and skipping around even though we're supposed to be working to learn a way to get home? Where is this coming from? I asked. Maybe he hadn't fit in as naturally as Liam and Zoo had, but I saw him talking to other kids as he worked. He seemed okay. Maybe not happy, but then again, when was he ever? This place really isn't that bad. Ruby? It's horrible, he burst out. Horrible. We're told when to eat, when to sleep, what to wear, and we're forced to work. How is this any different from camp? I sucked in a sharp breath. You're the one that wanted to come here. I'm sorry it's not living up to your high and mighty expectations, but it works for us. If you'd just try, you could be happy here. We're safe. Why are you in such a hurry to leave? Just because your parents didn't want you, it doesn't mean that the rest of ours don't. Maybe you're not in a hurry to get back, but I am. He might as well have shot me straight through the chest. I felt all of the blood leave my heart as one of his hands came up to clutch his dark hair. I've been working so hard. I've been trying, and God, you didn't even ask him, did you? Ask him? But I knew. As soon as the words left my mouth, I knew exactly what promise I had neglected to keep. The anger in me deflated. I'm so sorry. I've been so wrapped up in lessons that I forgot. Well, I didn't, he said, and left me standing alone in the sunlight. An hour later, I was under a stream of warm water, hands pressed to my face. The camp's washrooms, one for boys, one for girls, were about as glamorous as an outhouse. The floors were beveled concrete, the shower stalls wood planks and plastic curtains crawling with black mold. We used the rooms every night to brush our teeth and wash our faces, and, once or twice a week, to shower. But today, without floral shampoo and conditioner perfuming the air, I realized the cavernous room smelled like sawdust. I stayed in there until I heard the bells signal the end of lunch. I still hadn't formulated a plan for the rest of the day when I walked outside, and into the one person I hadn't realized I was desperate to see. Liam stumbled back a few steps at impact, his wet hair clinging to his cheeks, longer than I remembered. "Oh my God," I said with a laugh, pressing a hand to my chest. "You scared the hell out of me." "Sorry about that." He smiled, extending a hand toward me. "Hey, I don't think we've had the chance to meet. I'm Liam." 24. I don't know how long I stood there staring at his hand, bile rising in my throat as fast and steady as a scream. "Oh my God, no," I thought, taking a step back. "No, no, 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 no. See, you look exactly like a friend of mine, Ruby, but I haven't seen her in ages, so I'm..." His voice trailed off. "Okay, was that joke really that bad?" I turned around, pressing my face against my towel so he wouldn't see my tears. "Ruby?" He looped his own towel around my waist and drew me to his side. That was the Liam Stewart way of saying, Hi, darling. Missed you something fierce. Oh, wow. Bad enough to make you cry? He smoothed his hands down over my hair. Okay, that's it. He bent down and before I could stop him, lifted me over one shoulder. Liam didn't let me wiggle free until we were back at cabin 18. He dropped me on the folded futon that Zoo and I had been sharing, making a quick stop at his bed for a blanket. I'm not cold, I said when he wrapped it around my shoulders. Then why are you shaking? Liam sat down next to me. I turned so my face was resting in the crook of his neck, and I was breathing in his clean, woodsy smell. I'm just pissed at myself, I said when I found my voice. I told Chubbs I'd asked Clancy if he could use his laptop, but I got distracted and forgot. Liam's fingers were busy untangling my wet hair. I don't think he's upset at you. I think he's upset that I'm keeping us here. It's just reinforcing his fears about not getting home. How do I make it up to him? Well, for one thing, you could ask about the computer, he said, his other hand taking mine. Though I still don't really understand how you are in the position to ask to borrow it. I feel like I haven't seen you in ages. You haven't, I said. You're always on watch. He laughed. It's lonely sitting up in a tree without you. I want to hear about what you do all night, I said. Have you tried talking to anyone about freeing the camps yet? I brought it up with some of the guys on my watch, and Olivia. She's trying to get us in to see Clancy about it. I think it's going to be great. I really do. It could work. Clance said that the Western Gate is the one that used to give them the most trouble, I said, twisting to look up at him. You're being careful, right? Liam went very still beside me, so still that he seemed to forget to breathe. Clance, huh? He said in an unnaturally light voice. I guess you are in the position to be asking favors. What's that supposed to mean? Liam sighed. Nothing, sorry. I didn't mean for that to come out like that. It's great that you guys are friends. I tried to look up at him, but he was looking at the other end of the cabin where a set of drawers with our things rested against the wall. So, he's been giving you lessons? Yeah, I said, wondering how much, if anything, I should hold back. He's been teaching me how to keep others from prying into my head. What about tricks to keep you from slipping into others' heads? Liam asked. Is he helping you with that, too? He's trying to, I said. He said that if I strengthened my control over my abilities, that would come naturally. Well, you can always practice that with me, he said, resting his forehead against mine. I felt the trickle start at the back of my mind, the warning before the flood. Clancy had told me that when I felt it coming on, I needed to break all physical contact and imagine a white curtain sweeping between me and whomever I was with. But I didn't want to do either. I felt his lips travel from my forehead, whispering something against my eyelids, my cheeks, my nose. His thumbs stroked the length of my jaw, but even they stilled as I pulled back and turned away from him. What are you so scared of? He whispered, his voice laced with hurt. Had this boy really once just been a stranger? Had I really once thought that I'd be able to live a life without him in it? I don't want to lose you. He made a noise of frustration, his eyes clear and bright as he spoke. Then why are you the one that keeps letting go? I never got the chance to answer. A moment later, Hina burst through the cabin door, Zoo in tow, and told us they were leaving.
Okay, okay, slow down, Liam said.
Zoo was darting around the cabin, collecting her things, as Hina's mouth ran a mile a minute. I wasn't sure whom I was supposed to be paying attention to, my friend or the girl she had, apparently, elected to speak for her. Every time Hina opened her mouth, Liam and I reverted back to the same state of shock. Zoo. Leaving. Leaving. I caught her on her way to the drawers, steering her to the futon and forcing her to sit. She must not have picked up on our shock, because her face was bright and glowing. I studied it, the way her smile seemed to crackle with her own brand of electricity, and felt something inside of me shrink in defeat. Us and three others, Hina said breathlessly. I wondered if she had run all the way over from class.
two blues and a yellow. Kylie finally got permission to leave the camp.
Liam twisted around to look at Zoo when he said, "And go for a hike?" Zoo made her, "Are you serious?" face. "Help me out here. Tell me what you want to say."
Hina was finally silent, and for a moment, one crazy second really, I thought Zoo was actually going to open her mouth and have out with it. Liam's entire body tensed, as if he was expecting the same thing. But Zoo only slipped her notebook back out of her pink duffel bag and wrote in her neat, looping handwriting. When she flipped it over, she was looking him right in the eye. "I want to go with them to California." I know I should have been happy for her. I should have been celebrating the fact that she was finally able to come out and tell us exactly what she wanted. I just never imagined what she'd want would be a future without us.
"I thought Clancy turned down Kylie's request to leave," I asked Hina.
"He did, but she said she finally wore him down."
"What's in California?" Liam asked, leaning against a cabin wall.
"My parents have a house there," Hina explained, "and they're waiting for us. The West Coast government isn't going to turn us back over to the camps."
"What about Zoo's parents?" I asked. "They..." To her credit, Hina knew what I was trying to ask without my having to ask it.
"My father has not been on speaking terms with my uncle for some time."
"Zoo, that's a long trip," Liam began uncertainly. "What if something happens? Who else is going? That Talon kid?" She nodded, and all of a sudden her eyes were on me. I tried to give her an encouraging smile, but I was worried I might burst into tears instead. We all waited as she scribbled out another hasty note and showed it to Liam again.
"You don't have to worry about me anymore. Isn't that good?"
"I like worrying about you."
Liam put a hand on her head. "When would you be leaving?" Hina, at least, had the decency to look guilty.
"We actually have to leave right now. Kylie is worried. Clancy might change his mind. He wasn't all that happy."
"That's a little fast," I choked out. "Have you really thought about this?" Zoo looked right at me when she nodded. The next note was for both of us. "I want to be with my family. I just don't want you to be mad at me."
"Mad?" Liam shook his head. "Never, ever. You're my girl, Zoo.
We just want you to be safe. It would kill me if anything happened to you." There was a knock at the door. Talon, an older yellow with his hair woven into intricate dreadlocks, appeared first, followed by a wide-eyed Chubbs. Liam stood. "Good," he said. "I was hoping to talk to you." Talon nodded.
"I figured. Kylie and Lucy are here, too."
She stuck her head inside and waved.
"Do you want to talk outside?"
Liam's hand reached out and touched the small of my back.
"Help her pack?" "Are you nuts?" I heard Chubbs say. "You barely know these people."
"Excuse me," Hina protested, her hands on her hips. "In case you've forgotten, she's my cousin."
"I'll miss you, too."
Zoo stopped piling her things into her pink suitcase and tore the sheet of paper out for Chubbs to keep. He sat so suddenly that he almost missed the futon. For several moments, he couldn't do anything other than stare at her. I knew the feeling.
"Did Kylie say why you guys had to leave tonight?" I asked, sitting beside Chubbs.
Zoo only shrugged.
"I mean, are you guys just going to walk to California?" Chubbs said, his voice rising with each word. "Do you have some kind of plan?"
"Maybe you'll find a new Betty," I said.
But the moment I uttered her name, Zoo stopped packing and shook her head. The next note took some time for her to write.
"No, there's only one Betty."
"And apparently she wasn't enough for you," Chubbs said, with a shocking amount of hurt. "I guess everything is replaceable. Even us."
Zoo took a deep breath, walking over to him with her pink bag at her side. He tried to look away, but she was standing right in front of him, wrapping her arms around his neck. All he could do was hug her back, his face hidden in the fabric of her jacket. The camp's bells began to ring, a frenzied sound that didn't cease until it had driven everyone outside. I let Zoo and Hina lead us, pushing a path through the gathered kids. This was the first time their black garb seemed remotely appropriate. Kylie handed a piece of paper to Lee, and he nodded at whatever she was telling him. Lucy was next to them, as tiny and quiet as ever, but she reached up and patted Liam on the shoulder in what I guess was supposed to be a reassuring way. All happy pretenses were gone. The only way to describe the look on his face was stricken.
"Borrow that pen?"
he asked Talon. The boy began to pat down his black cargo pants, searching the pockets until he came up with a blue-capped pen. With it in hand, Liam knelt down in front of Zoo and tore off half the sheet of paper Kylie had given him. I wished I could have seen what he had written there, but it wasn't for my eyes. When he was finished, he folded the paper over several times and pressed it into her palm. The bell fell silent. Everyone's eyes shifted to the right, where Clancy appeared at the head of the path, haze towering beside him. His face, which I had grown used to seeing relaxed and proud, was pinched with what was either annoyance or anger.
"Kylie has decided to go tribal and will be leaving immediately."
A murmur of surprise rippled through the crowd. "She will only take these four with her," he shouted over the noise. "There will be no more requests to leave granted until our numbers are full. Is that understood?"
Silence.
"Is that understood?" Chubbs jumped beside me at the noises and shouts, confirming that yes, it was. Clancy turned sharply on his heel without another word, heading back in the direction of the office. As soon as he reached the white building, the kids around us seemed to exhale the collective breath they had been holding, turning to each other with confused whispers.
"That was weird. Why didn't he give them bags like he usually does? He's worried if our numbers get down too low, there won't be enough people here to protect the camp."
My eyes floated up toward the office until they fixed on Zoo waving me over. "No gloves," I thought, watching her hand fall back to her side. Hopefully, never again.
"Do you really have to leave now?" I asked when I reached where she and Liam were standing.
The clusters of kids swarmed Kylie and the others, wishing them good luck and offering up blankets and bags of food. Zoo put on a brave smile, wrapping her arms around my waist.
"Please be safe," I told her.
The next note was for me and me alone.
"When all this is over, will you come find me? There's something I want to tell you, but I don't know how to say it yet."
My eyes traced every inch of her face. It was so different from the girl I had met only a few weeks ago. If she had changed this much in so little time, how could I even be sure I'd recognize her years down the line, after the dust of all this hell finally settled?
"Of course," I whispered, "and I'll miss you every day until then."
Just before they stepped off the trail and into the untamed forest, Zoo turned and gave us one last wave. Beside her, Hina did the same. Then, they were gone.
"She'll be okay," I said. "They'll take care of her. She should be with her family. Her real one."
"She should be with us."
Liam shook his head, his breath catching in his throat.
"Then, maybe we should follow her."
Liam and I turned back. Chubbs was trailing behind us, his eyes hidden as the drooping sunlight caught his glasses.
"You know we can't," Liam said.
"Not yet."
"Why not?"
Chubbs advanced toward us, his voice losing all semblance of calm it held before. Feeling the curious eyes on us, I drew them both off the main path.
"Why not?" Chubbs repeated. "Clearly we aren't going to get the help we need to track down our parents or Jack's. It'd be better for us to just go now before anyone misses us. We could still catch up with her."
"And do what?"
Liam asked. He ran a frustrated hand through his already mussed-up hair. "Wander around until we just so happen to stumble on them? Hope that we don't get our asses caught and thrown back into camp?"
"Chubbs, it's safe here. This is the place we're supposed to be. We can do so much good from here."
I saw, maybe even before Liam did, that this was the wrong thing to say. Warning alarms went off in my mind at the sight of Chubbs' nostrils flaring and his lips twisting with anger. I knew that whatever was about to leave Chubbs' mouth would not only be sharp, but cruel.
"I get it,"
I get it, Lee, okay? Chubb shook his head. You want to be the big hero again. You want everyone to adore you and believe in you and follow you. Liam tensed. That's not... he began angrily. Well, what about the kids who followed you before? He slapped around the pocket of his trousers before pulling out a familiar folded piece of paper. Chubb's grip on the letter nearly crushed it. What about Jack and Brian and Andy and all of them? They all followed you too, but it's easy to forget about them when they're not around, isn't it? Chubbs, I said, stepping between them when Liam advanced, his right fist swinging up. I'd never seen him look so perfectly furious before, a wave of crimson washing up from Liam's throat to his face.
Can't you just admit you're doing this to make yourself feel better, not to actually help anyone else? Chubbs demanded.
You think? Liam almost couldn't get the words out. You think they're not in my head every goddamn second of every goddamn day? You think I could ever forget something like that? Instead of hitting his friend, Liam hit himself, banging his fists against his forehead until I finally caught his arm.
Jesus Christ, Charles!
He said, his voice breaking.
I just...
Chubb stalked past us, only to stop and turn back again.
I never believed you.
You know, he said, his voice shaking, when you talked about getting out of camp and getting home safely, that's why I agreed to write my letter. I knew most of us wouldn't make it with you in charge. I stepped forward the same moment Liam did, holding my hands out in front of me to keep him from doing something I knew he would regret. I heard Chubb's storm away behind me, heading back in the direction of our cabin. Liam tried to take another step forward, but I pressed back against his chest. Liam was breathing hard, his fists balled up at his sides. Let him go, I said. He just needs to blow off steam. Maybe you should think about doing the same. Liam looked like he was about to say something, but instead, he let out a frustrated grunt, spun on his heel, and started toward the nearby trees, in the exact opposite direction Chubbs had taken. I leaned back against the trunk of the nearest tree and shut my eyes. My chest was too tight to do anything other than take in shallow, short breaths as I waited. It was nearly dark by the time he emerged, rubbing his face. The skin on both hands was torn and bleeding from smashing them into something solid. His face was drawn in the twilight, as if the flush of anger had been ripped out of him and he'd been left with nothing more than gray sadness. I held out an arm to him as he came near, wrapping it around the solid warmth of his waist. His arm settled down over my shoulders and he pulled me close, pressing his face against my hair. I took in a deep breath of his comforting smell, wood smoke, grass, and leather. He didn't mean it, I said, walking him over to a fallen log. He was still shaking and looked unsteady on his feet. Liam didn't sit so much as collapse down onto it, leaning forward to brace his elbows against his knees. Doesn't make it any less true. We sat for a long time, long enough for the sun to disappear behind the trees and then below the horizon. The silence and stillness between us became unbearable. I lifted my hand and guided it lightly down the length of knobby bones between his shoulder blades. Liam sat up slowly, turning to look at me.
Do you think he's okay?
He whispered. I think we should probably go check, I said. I don't know how we made it back to the cabin, only that when we arrived, Chubbs was sitting on the porch, silent tears streaming down his face. I could see the apology written there, the wretched guilt, and was surprised to find my heart could break even that bit more.
It's over, he said as we sat on either side of him. It's all over.
We didn't move for a long time. 25. It shouldn't have surprised me that Liam threw himself back into watch duty, but it took a generous amount of coaxing from the others for his mind to refocus on the camps. I sat by his side more than once as he and Olivia talked through possible ways of breaking through camp defenses, offering suggestions here and there as they discussed how to bring up their ideas with Clancy. The thing about enthusiasm, especially Liam's particular brand, was that it was catching. There would be nights I would simply sit back watching as he became more and more animated with his hands as he spoke, as if trying to shape his ideas out of the air for the rest of us to see. His words were coated with such unyielding hopefulness that it visibly inflated everyone around him. By the end of the first week, interest in the project had spiked to such a level that we had to move the meetings out of our small cabin to the fire pit. Now, when Liam went anywhere, it was always with a loyal pack of kids around him, trying to catch his ear. Chubbs and I were less enthusiastic about getting back into the swing of things. He forgave me, maybe because a miserable person can only stand to be alone with their misery for so long. He never went back to work at the garden, but that girl, the bossy one, never ratted him out either. I went back to lessons with Clancy, or at least tried to.
"Where is your head at today?"
Not invading his, that was for certain. Not even cracking it.
"Show me what you're thinking about," he said when I opened my mouth. "I don't want to hear about it. I want to see it."
I glanced up from the pool of sunlight spilling from his window to the floor. Clancy leveled me with a look of annoyance that I had only seen him wear once after realizing one of the remaining yellows couldn't zap one of the camp's few washing machines back to life. Never at me, though. I closed my eyes and reached for his hand again. I brought to mind the memory of Zoo's backpack disappearing into the wild thicket of trees. Over the past few weeks, fewer and fewer of our conversations had involved words. When we wanted to get a point across, we shared it our own way, spoke in our own language. But not today. His mind might as well have been encased in concrete, and mine might as well have been made of jelly. "Sorry," I mumbled. I couldn't even muster the strength to feel disappointed. I could feel myself slipping into a strange funk, one in which every little noise or sight outside the window was enough to distract me. I just felt tired, confused.
"I do have other things I could be doing," he continued, something simmering beneath his words. "I have rounds to make and people to talk to, but I'm trying to help you. I'm here with you."
At that, my stomach did a strange flop. I sat straight up against his headboard, ready to apologize again, when he rolled off his bed and moved across the room to his desk. "Clancy, I really am sorry." By the time I came to stand in front of the desk, he was already typing away at his laptop. He let me stand there in silent, gut-twisting worry for what felt like nearly an hour before he bothered to look up from whatever he was doing. He seemed tired of pretending now, too. Annoyance had taken a sharp turn into anger.
"You know, I really thought that letting your yellow go would help you focus. But I guess I was wrong."
Clancy shook his head.
"I was wrong about a lot of things, apparently."
I bristled, but I'm not sure if it was because of the way he said, "your yellow," or the implication that I wasn't capable of mastering the things he was trying to teach me. I needed to leave. If I stayed a second longer, I might say something that would ruin our friendship. I might tell him that Zoo had a name, that of course I'd be worried about her out in the world without me there to protect her. He should have realized that I could have spent the last few weeks spending time with her, but instead I had agreed to work with him, spend time with him, comfort and support him. Maybe I had learned a lot, and maybe I had a better grip on my abilities. But staring at him, my fists clenched and shaking, I couldn't justify it. What was the point of being holed up with someone who didn't believe in me when I had people out there who did? I turned sharply on my heel and stalked toward the door. As I opened it, Clancy called,
"That's right, Ruby. Run away again. See how far you get this time."
I didn't look back and I didn't stop, though some part of me recognized that this might be it. That I was walking out on the one chance I had to learn how to manage my abilities. Sometime in the last 10 minutes, my head had disconnected itself from the stubborn muscle beating in my chest, and, honestly, I wasn't sure which was guiding me outside and away from him. But what I did know, with dead, absolute certainty, was that I didn't want him to see the way my face crumpled, or for him to glimpse whispers of guilt and sadness circling around inside of my head. I couldn't hide anything from him,
but this was the first time I had ever wanted to. It took a few days for me to realize that Zoo's leaving wasn't the only event that had shifted the rotation of the Earth. Once Chubbs had pointed out East River's similarities to camp life, I couldn't go back. Where I had seen kids in jeans and black t-shirts, I was now seeing uniforms. Where I had seen kids waiting in line for their food, I was now seeing the mess hall. When the lights turned out in the cabins at 9 p.m. sharp and I watched a few members of the security team stroll past our window, I was back in cabin 27, staring up at the belly of Sam's mattress. I began to wonder if the supposedly dead security cameras in the office and around the facilities were actually on. I did try to go see Clancy a few times to apologize, but he always sent me away with a stern, "I don't have time for you today." I got the sense he was punishing me, but I wasn't sure what I had said or done to warrant it. In any case, it quickly became clear that I needed him in my life more than he needed me. That, combined with my stinging pride, made me feel even worse. It was a Wednesday, only an hour before Liam and the others were meeting to discuss a new camp liberation strategy, before Clancy was finally ready to see me. "I'll be back in a little while," I told Liam, squeezing his hand at breakfast. "I'll just be a few minutes late." But when I walked into Clancy's office and saw the state of it, I wondered if I should have come at all.
"Hey, come in. Just watch your step."
"Yeah, sorry about the mess."
"Mess? Mess?" His office looked like someone had detonated a bomb and unleashed a pack of wild wolves to pick over the salvageable remains. There were piles of paper everywhere. Printouts, torn maps, boxes. And then there was Clancy himself, his hair falling into his face, wearing the same rumpled white shirt I had seen the day before. In the weeks I had known him, I had never seen Clancy as anything less than impeccable. It was actually a little scary how put together he was. I'm sure some of it had to do with the way he was raised, that even if his father hadn't taught him himself, some crotchety old nanny had waxed poetic on the value of tucking your shirt in, polishing your shoes, and combing your hair. He looked like he was fraying at the edges.
"Are you okay?" I asked, shutting the door behind me. "What's going on?"
"We're trying to coordinate a hit for med supplies."
Clancy settled down into his chair, but was back on his feet a moment later when his laptop began to chime.
"Hang on, just a sec."
I towed one of the paper piles on the floor, trying to peek at what was written on it.
"Those are reports of the usual nightly activity at a nearby truck stop," Clancy said, as if reading my thoughts. His fingers flew over the keyboard. "And league intelligence about PSFs in that area. It seems that Lita Corporation is now employing the government to protect their shipments."
"Why the PSFs?" I asked.
Clancy shrugged. "They're the largest military force the government has now, and, thanks to dear old Dad, the most organized."
"I guess that makes sense." I leaned back, but staring at the glowing symbol on the laptop lid reminded me of Chubbs.
"Can I ask you a favor?"
"Only if you let me apologize first."
I sat down and studied my hands.
"Can't we just forget it ever happened?"
"No, not this time," he said. "Hey, will you look at me?"
The expression on his face alone made my heart swell to twice its usual size. It was dangerous how handsome he was, but today his pained look was absolutely lethal.
"He does care," a little voice in my head whispered. "He cares about you."
"I'm sorry for losing my temper," he said. "I didn't mean the things I said about your friend Suzume, and I definitely didn't mean to imply that you haven't been trying."
"Then why did you say that?"
Clancy rubbed a hand over his face.
"Because I'm an idiot?"
"That's not an answer," I told him, shaking my head.
"You really hurt me."
"Ruby,
isn't it obvious?" he said.
"I like you. I've only known you for, what, a month? And you're probably the only real friend I've had since I turned 10 and figured out what I was. I'm an idiot for getting so upset that you were focused on someone else when I wanted you to be focused on me."
I was almost too stunned to move.
"I didn't let Suzume and the others go because I thought it would help you focus. I let her go because I thought it would make you happy.
I didn't even stop to think that, yeah, of course you'd be worried about her, especially after how hard you worked to protect her.
He more than cares about you.
I had to look away now, play the situation off. My brain had turned to mush, and my heart wasn't much better.
I guess I could forgive you.
But only if I do you that favor. I could hear the smile in his voice.
Sure.
What?
Well, I know you don't allow it, but I was hoping you'd make an exception in this case, I said, finally looking back at him. My friend, he needs to use your computer to try to contact his parents.
Clancy stopped smiling. Your friend, Liam?
No, Charles Meriwether?
The one who's been skipping garden duty?
Okay, apparently that girl had ratted him out.
Clancy was silent as he shut the laptop and stood. I'm really sorry, Ruby, but I thought I made it clear that no one else could leave.
Oh, no, I said, forcing a laugh. He just wants to check in with his parents to make sure they're all right.
No, Clancy said, moving around so he was sitting on the edge of the desk in front of me. He wants to make arrangements to leave and take you with him. Don't try to cover for him, Ruby. It's the same for everyone. I don't doubt for a second that he's desperate enough to tell his parents the location of this camp.
He would never, I said, getting riled up on Chubb's behalf. Really?
You were there when we had intruders a few weeks ago. You saw how easy it could be for someone to slip past our defenses. What if they hadn't triggered the alarm?
We would have been in serious trouble.
Clancy's face was dark, worried. If Charles wants to contact his parents, tell him he needs to fill out a request with instructions on how to do it, just like everyone else. I have to base my decisions on what might threaten the camp's security, no matter how much I want to help you help your friend.
It was no good. Chubbs would rather not contact his parents at all than grant a stranger access to his only means of safely communicating with them.
Though, Clancy said after a moment, sitting down next to me and kicking his legs up on the desk, there is something that could persuade me.
I couldn't look at him.
15 minutes, Ruby. You teach me.
What could I possibly know that he didn't?
Do you think you could walk me through how you erase someone's memory? I know it's not something you're proud of, and I know it's caused you a lot of pain in the past, but it seems like a useful trick, and I'd be interested to learn it.
Well, I guess, I said, like I could deny him after all that he had done for me. But it wasn't something I knew how to teach. I'd barely managed to figure it out for myself.
I think understanding how you do it will also help me figure out how to prevent you from accidentally doing it again. Sound good?
That sounded great, actually.
If you'd let me, he continued, I'd like to walk through your memories and see if I can find any clues. I just want to confirm a suspicion I have.
I don't think he expected the request to give me pause, but it did. He had been in my head multiple times, seeing things I'd never spoken about to anyone, but I'd been able to keep him from seeing the things that really mattered, the dreams I wanted to protect. I kept thinking about what Liam had said before, when he told me about his sister. Those memories are mine. But if I wanted a future with my family, with Liam, then I had to relinquish my control. I had to let Clancy in if it meant I could avoid the same thing happening in the future.
You can trust him, said the same voice at the back of my mind. He's your friend. He would never overstep.
Okay, I said, but only those, and afterward, Charles gets to use your computer.
Deal.
Clancy knelt in front of me, hands cupping my jaw, fingers weaving through my hair. I tried not to squirm at his proximity and his assumption that I would be fine with it. We'd sat this close before, but somehow this felt different.
Wait, I said, sitting back. I told Liam and the others I'd meet with them about something. Can we maybe do this later, or even tomorrow?
It'll only take a second, Clancy promised, his voice soothing and low. Just close your eyes and think about the morning you woke up on your 10th birthday. Come on, that same voice said. Come on, Ruby.
I swallowed hard and did as he asked, imagining myself back in my old room, with its blue walls and enormous window. Bit by bit, the room reassembled itself. Blank walls bloomed with cross-stitch samplers Grams had sewn, pictures of my parents, and a map of D.C.'s metro system. I could see all six of the stuffed animals I slept with on the floor next to my bright blue comforter. Even things I had completely forgotten, the lamp on my small desk, the way the middle shelf of my bookcase sagged, suddenly came back into clear focus.
Good.
Clancy sounded far away, but I felt him near, closer and closer. His breath was warm across my cheek, an unexpected touch. He sounded breathless. Keep thinking. I saw his face through a glossy haze, his dark eyes burning the shimmering air. I saw only him, because for those few passing moments, he was the only thing that seemed to exist in my world. Every part of me felt slow and warm, like honey. Clancy blinked once, then again, as if to clear his own cloudy gaze, to remember what he was supposed to be doing.
Just keep...
And then his lips. His lips were so close, smiling against mine. Fingers wove their way through my long hair, thumbs gliding along my cheeks.
You, he began, his voice hoarse. You are...
At the slightest pressure, something hot and dark sparked there, sending a wave of desire straight into my core. His hands slid down over my neck, my shoulders, down my arms, down... And then there was nothing gentle about it. His lips pressed against mine hard, with enough force to drive them apart, to steal breath and sense and the feel of the bed under me. The skin of his face was smooth and cool against mine, but I was warm, too warm. The fever that swept up over me made my body go limp, and I was pressed back against the bed, sinking into the pillows there like I was falling through clouds. The blood had left my head, and all that was left there was a low, throbbing pulse. My hands came up to tangle in his shirt. I needed to grasp something to hang on before I fell too far.
Yes, I heard him breathe out, and then his mouth was on mine again, his hands at the hem of my top, edging it up over my stomach.
You want this, a voice whispered. You want this. But it wasn't my voice. I wasn't saying that, was I? In that instant, a flash of his black eyes gave way to a light blue. That was what I wanted, what I really wanted. My mind felt slow, drugged with a strain of thought. Liam. But here was Clancy. Clancy, who helped me, my friend, beautiful in a way that made me lose trains of thought. Clancy, who more than liked me, who was also an orange. My eyes flew open as his hands slipped up to my neck, his fingers tightening slightly around the skin there. I tried to pull back, but it felt like he had flooded my veins with concrete. I couldn't move. I couldn't even shut my eyes. Stop, I tried to say, but when his forehead found mine, the pain that exploded behind my eyes was enough to make me forget everything.
26. The computer's frantic beeping woke me from a dreamless sleep, tugging at me until my eyes drifted open. I was lying in darkness. My body felt heavy, and though someone had pulled off my sweater, my shirt was plastered to my skin with a thin sheen of sweat. If I had been alone, I might have taken it off, or at least kicked my jeans off my legs to let my body breathe. But I knew better. I was still in his room, and if I was here, then so was he. The light on Clancy's dresser was on, and I could hear the voices of kids below at the fire pit. Night already? It was insane that my blood could run as frigid as winter. At the same moment, my heart started to squeeze out a panicked rhythm. The creaking of the old mattress was drowned out by the TV. For a while, I did nothing but listen to President Gray's baritone voice give his nightly address. My legs seemed to be the last part of my body willing to wake up.
assure you that the jobless rate has declined from 30% to 20% in this past year alone. I gave you my word that I would succeed where the false government would not. As much as they would like you to believe they have influence on the world stage, they can barely control their terrorist branch, this so-called Children's League.
The TV set turned off with a hiss of static. Footsteps.
Are you awake?
Yes, I whispered. My throat felt sore, my tongue swollen. The bed dipped as Clancy sat down beside me. I tried not to wince.
What happened? I asked. The sound of the voices below grew louder, getting trapped between my ears.
You passed out, he said. I didn't realize.
I shouldn't have pushed so hard.
I raised myself up on my elbows in a vain attempt to pull away from his touch. My eyes were fixated on his lips, the white teeth gleaming behind them. Had I imagined it? Or had he... My stomach clenched.
Did you find anything out? Did you prove your theory?
Clancy sat back, his face unreadable.
No.
He stood again and began to pace between the window and the white curtain. I caught a glimpse of the other side of the room and was unsurprised to find that it was awash in the blue light of the open laptop.
No, see, I've been going over this again and again in my head, Clancy said. I thought maybe you erased their memories intentionally because you were angry or upset, but you didn't go all out and erase their entire memories, just you. And again with that girl Samantha. Samantha Dahl, age 17, from Bethesda, Maryland, parents Ashley and Todd, green, photographic memory.
His voice trailed off.
I've been thinking around and around and around in circles, trying to understand how you do this. But walking through your memories doesn't tell me what's going on inside of your head. No cause, only effect.
I wondered if he even realized he was rambling, or that I had managed to get myself off the bed, with my only thought to get the hell out of that room and away from him. The pain came back to me in pieces. What did he do to me?
I brought a hand to my forehead. My head ached like all the other times he had been inside of it, but the pain was sharper. He hadn't just looked in. He had made me want him, made me want to kiss him. Hadn't he?
It's late, I said, interrupting him. I need to go find the others.
Clancy turned his back on me.
Find Liam Stewart, you mean?
Yes, Lee, I said, taking a few slow steps back toward the door. I was supposed to meet him. He's going to be worried.
The white curtain caught in my hair as I passed it. Clancy shook his head.
What do you even know about him, Ruby? You've known him for what, a month? A month and a half? Why are you wasting your time with him?
He's a blue. And not only that, but he had a record even before camp. Even before he killed all of those kids. 148, over half of their camp. So you can cut all of your bullshit and hero worship because he doesn't deserve it. You're too valuable to be screwing around with him.
He whirled around just as my hand touched the door and slammed it shut.
What is your problem? I yelled. So what if he's a blue? Aren't you the one that keeps going on about how we're all black and how we should respect each other?
The smile that curled his lips was as arrogant as it was beautiful.
You need to accept the fact that you're orange and that you're always going to be alone because of it.
A measure of calm had returned to Clancy's voice. His nostrils flared when I tried to turn the door handle again. He slammed both hands against it to keep me from going anywhere, towering over me.
I saw what you want, Clancy said. And it's not your parents. It's not even your friends. What you want is to be with him, like you were in the cabin yesterday or in that car in the woods.
I don't want to lose you, you said.
Is he really that important?
Rage boiled up from my stomach, burning my throat.
How dare you? You said you wouldn't. You said...
He let out a bark of laughter.
God, you're naive.
I guess this explains how that League woman was able to trick you into thinking you were something less than a monster.
You said you would help me, I whispered.
He rolled his eyes. All right. Are you ready for the last lesson? Ruby Elizabeth Daly, you are alone, and you always will be. If you weren't so stupid, you would have figured it out by now, but since it's beyond you, let me spell it out. You will never be able to control your abilities. You will never be able to avoid being pulled into someone's head, because there's some part of you that doesn't want to know how to control them. No, not when it would